You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we won't stop the world's engine, but we will laugh as it slowly comes to a halt. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I want to thank you for stopping by the nation in which I reside. We appreciate it, and if you enjoy your trip here in the Midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Joining me this trip, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
You know, getting over multiple illnesses.
Also living in a city. Sclerosis. I was like, you don't get over that.
Yes. Just had a bout of that this weekend.
Multiple
James,
sclerosis.
Shut the fuck up. You haven't been introduced yet. Seriously.
I'm sorry, Justin. I'm sorry, Daniel. I'm sorry, Motive Power. Everyone, I'm sorry about, you know, talking before I'm introduced. You don't even know who I am yet. You don't even know, and I'm talking.
This is my time with Justin, James.
I know.
I gave him, he could talk about anything too. It was an open-ended question this week. Of course, he talked about being sick, which is why I don't ask open-ended fucking questions.
I thought our listeners would find it interesting that I've had food poisoning and two colds in the span of 2 weeks.
That just means there's biological warfare in DC is what that means.
Also, I have not seen the sun in 21 days. God. DC has become fucking Seattle. It's horrible. Now I know what Lewis Black was talking about, by the way, when he said after you live in Seattle for a while, like on the 50th day of gray and more gray, you want to slit your wrist just to see some color. Pretty much how I feel right now in the district.
If you're in D.C. and it's 30 days of night, does everyone come out in their true form of vampires?
That's pretty much what they are all the time.
You're saying their true form.
Yeah, I just wanted to work in that reference. Because you said 21 days.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so move on to the white privilege guy.
Also joining us this trip via Skype, from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. How are you, James?
I'm doing great. I'm just busting my balls to help my girlfriend pass physics and calculus.
To be clear, he's talking college physics and calculus here, not high school.
I just want to be clear about that. My high school girlfriend, is in physics and calculus. You know, we've been going out for a few years, you know, since she was 16.
She's smart for her age.
Sadly, that's not probably the most immoral thing that's happened this week. Let's find out what I'm talking about in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. 'Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
Budweiser. That's the whole joke. That's really it. We can just laugh and then move on.
I mean, they were probably drunk when they did this, right?
To be fair.
That's the only explanation, isn't it?
Although I'm not technically sure you can be drunk on Budweiser beer.
Yeah.
As I've seen people drink.
Dude, I thought you said they were Trump when they did this. Or they lost Trump. And that's how they... We need to tell the audience what we're even talking about.
No, we don't. The audience can read our minds.
Although James did just hit on an interesting thing. So, Daniel, you read the news story, and then I'm going to say the interesting thing that James just hit on. And I don't
High
school girls when I say James hit on something.
FastCodesign.com reports that until the November election, Budweiser is swapping out everything on its can, including its own name, to be as patriotic as possible, In fact, the iconic red and silver and blue beer will be named America. Yes. America.
So this is my question.
So,
just yeah. America.
What if Trump knew that Budweiser was going to do this? And when he says make America great again, he just means Budweiser. And then he's going to reveal that at the end of his platform, at the end of his campaign. And he's going to be like, I didn't fucking lie. I said I was going to make America great again.
So I turned it into beer. That would imply that Budweiser was at some point great. Budweiser is definitionally the shittiest of beers.
The king of beers.
Well, I mean,
the
wasn't it great before?
Of shitty beers.
Wasn't it great before we knew anything else was better? Sort of like the Roman Empire was great at one point, but that's before we knew America was possible.
That's like if the Roman Empire was like, you know, trying to get drunk in your basement as a high school student, and America is like, you know, you've gotten out of college and then you've discovered like microbrews.
I mean, isn't that
yes.
the Roman Empire in America? I mean, that seems like a pretty good metaphor to me.
I'm getting all of the different Americas mixed up right now, like the actual America, the Budweiser America, and then the metaphorical microbrew America, so I don't even know what you're talking about now.
All we need is America Ferrera to get into this story.
I could go for some America Ferrera right now.
Yeah, so here's the thing about this. it's dumb. We got that part. But the name isn't the only thing they're changing on the can. They're changing, like, their tagline, which used to be some nonsense. They're changing it to E Pluribus Unum, and they're putting established in 1776, and they're printing the Star Spangled Banner and the Pledge of Allegiance on the can. Here's the thing, though.
Oh, there's also the Declaration of Independence, too, I mm-hmm. think. They have the preamble printed on the back.
Mm, yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. I think this is cool. But anyway.
Also, every can comes with an apple pie in it. Also a baseball and a hot dog and a cowboy. Because people forget that Budweiser was bought by InBev, which is a Belgian company. So I can see the Belgian marketing agency going over there thinking, what do Americans like more than beer? America! How can we make this thing as fucking American as possible? We'll call it America!
I actually do think that was their exact meaning. I pictured something similar when I read this story.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah,
I actually really like this. This is possibly the only thing I could imagine that would actually get me to drink Budweiser. I mean America. I will be drinking America this summer. At least
oh,
one.
Oh man. Wouldn't it be wildly confusing for your friends though if you're like, man, I'm gonna pound me some America. Oh God.
What if you're hanging out with America Ferrera's boyfriend and you say that?
Things could get weird.
I like it how you just completely just contrived a situation in which you could talk about pounding America. Oh my God.
No, but this, what about for me? This is oppressive towards me. This is a microaggression, not a
micro. This is a micro brew aggression. Yes.
Against straight edge people. Because now I can't say I'm drunk on American pride. I'm drunk on my love for America, because it's going to sound like I'm a fucking alcoholic.
It's true. The only thing worse than this company naming their beer America and, you know, using this as a marketing tactic, and there's some data about whether or not it's bad. James, I get your point. Is that no one is going to be legitimately drinking it because they love America.
Yeah,
Budweiser are hipsters. They're going to be drinking it because it's ironic.
Well, wait, wouldn't that be America Blue Ribbon if it was hipsters drinking it?
Well, Pabst Blue Ribbon has become too mainstream.
That's probably true. We need to just downgrade. Pretty soon hipsters will be drinking Natty Ice. And then,
yes.
And then they'll be like, wait a second, what have we done? Like, how did it reach this point?
But in a way, doesn't the fact that hipsters are going to drink this make this the perfect marketing technique because they can't love anything actually, so now they're gonna love America ironically?
Yeah, that's, I don't actually like this. I mean, like, when I first read this, I liked the idea of it, but then I realized, like, wait a second, it's not 20 years in the past. If this was done 20 years ago, I feel like it would have been done non-ironically, and it just would have been awesome. It would just been, it would have been like a Chuck Norris kind of awesome, you know what I mean? Where it's like,
oh yeah,
I know it's a little over the top, but like, we really do love it, you know? It's kind of that, that's sort of the idea, but, you can tell, I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think this was written in such a way that it appeals to the ironic sensibility just as much as it appeals to the, so, you know, the sincere one. And I don't like that element to it.
I have a favorite part of this story that isn't actually in this story.
What?
Which is that there is a Michigan brewery, the Saugatuck Brewing Company, which, mere days after Anheuser-Busch announced that they would be making a beer called, apostrophe, Murica. And they announced it with much fanfare saying, quote, we're here to make name, I'm sorry. Something happened. I'm gonna have to start this over again. Oh, a fucking video started playing on therap.com. Bastards.
Okay, look, that site has the next story, but that fucking site is actually really annoying. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, okay. They announced the beer with much fanfare saying, quote, we're here to make beer named after America great again. We're very proud to introduce our brand new name and packaging, along with the assurance that all of our beer is brewed under the careful watch of 1,776 bald eagles. They went on to say, I'm going to read this because it's fucking awesome. This ensures that every drop of our beer is true and honest as our forefathers before us. Unlike other America beers, our brewery is completely American owned. What does it taste like, you ask? Freedom. It tastes like freedom. Drink American. Drink Saugatuck Brewing Company.
Can we just have a bunch of beer companies rename their beers after countries or locations? Like, can Coors Light come out with, like, the Confederacy? And like Sam Adams can just be called Boston.
I thought the Confederacy would be Yingling. Wouldn't it be Yingling?
Well, Yingling's
no, dude, Yingling
just
is Pennsylvania
because of its colors.
Come on,
is it Yingling Pennsylvania? Is,
yeah, Yingling's Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Oh, I only
how
ever saw it drunk in
that?
The South.
You don't.
I only ever saw it drank by fratty boys at Clemson.
That's because when we were there,
Yingling
it
is
got
the
to the
best.
South.
Just bland ass American beer. It's actually pretty good. Have you ever, dude? Have you ever drank so much? Have you ever drank so much Yingling? It starts tasting like pennies.
I always thought Yingling was Japanese or something.
Yeah, the only reason I don't drink when someone describes something you drink a lot that starts to taste like pennies, not appealing to me. But I want Dos Equis to be named Mexico, and I want Trump to say that he's really going to make Dos Equis pay for a wall.
I think Dos Equis and Corona would have to fight it out over which one's more Mexican. So, and that's a tough battle
right there. They both have different Mexican qualities to them, right? Like Corona is, you know, the typical Mexican where it's like, that's the one everyone drinks. But Dos Equis tries to pretend it's better than what it is. Like it tries to pretend it's the most interesting man in the world, which is like the Mexican elite who keep all the other Mexicans down.
Hmm.
I don't yes. always drink beer, but when I do, I build a little wall around it.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I oppress the masses.
Speaking of people who want to oppress the masses, Caitlyn Jenner. I have no idea how that transitions, except that I'm tired of hearing about fucking Caitlyn Jenner. But here we go.
You
the rap
about
reports.
Fucking Caitlyn Jenner?
Are you transphobic?
Hilarious.
Man, she looks jacked, or he looks jacked in this picture.
It's because he is. He's an Olympic athlete.
No, I mean, like, his face looks jacked up.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like, well, it's just,
also because
know.
He went through gender.
That could be because it's, yeah, that could be. That could be one of those, yep. Anyway, go on.
According to therap.com, Caitlyn Jenner has experienced sex change regret and might detransition, a biographer recently said. Yes, Ian Halperin, the author of Kardashian Dynasty, The Controversial Rise of America's Royal Family, said that while researching his book, multiple sources told him that the former Olympian had been miserable for months and has considered transitioning back to a man. Quote, one source confirmed to me, Caitlin has made whispers of sex change regret, hinting she might go back to being Bruce Jenner.
did he already get his pecker cut off?
No.
That was
still has the wangs. Well.
Does he still have the balls?
Still has the package.
Okay. All
part
right.
of the reason she
I mean, at least
wants,
he didn't commit to it.
Part of the reason she might want to be back to being a he is that she still digs chicks.
That's a good reason.
It's apparently hard for a transitioned woman with the wang to get dates. I guess we're not that progressive. Where are all the progressive women lining up to suck Caitlyn Jenner's wang?
Caitlyn Jenner has to go on the dating app for crying game fans. That's what she has to go on to get a date.
Oh my god.
Where are all the progressive women lining up to be boned by this transgender, beautiful princess, brave butterfly?
Okay,
apparently, they don't exist.
There's a lot to talk about in this story, but I want to mention something first. When did the Kardashians, whatever the fuck they're called, I watch too much Deep Space Nine in my free time. When did they become America's dynasty? Like, have we already forgotten the Kennedys?
Or the Bushes?
Yeah, fuck them. They're all dead.
Or the Bushes? Or, you know, soon to be the Clintons?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I guess we have.
It's a dynasty for people who don't, you know, pay attention to things that are important. It's like strictly... If you told half the country, you know, Bruce Jenner was in charge of the country, they'd say like, oh yeah, that sounds right. Isn't he like a big deal now?
Yeah, but I mean, JFK was the original version of that. He was the president and he was doing this shit. So.
Yeah. So we got that, you know, little nugget out of the way, like how it's the royal family. But I mean, here's something I'll say. You'll notice that, you know, I insist on, you know, calling him and Daniel's, you know, calling him her. But I mean, so here's why I'm doing that is because it's like, I don't want to participate. I have kind of two sides to this is I feel really bad for him that like, I mean, he is a man with a mental disorder. And that's not something to be, I mean, ultimately it's not, I mean, we can laugh at it, but like ultimately it is a serious matter. He should be treated. And it's an even more serious matter that people are going along with his illusion. It would be like, imagine if we had a society that said like, we need to be tolerant of schizophrenic people because like, you know, their voices that they hear have rights and we ought to not deny the existence of those voices. You know, we should instead encourage it. You know, we should encourage them to listen to the voices. You know, please, you know, jump off this building because the voice says so or whatever. You know, I mean, I would put it on the same level as that.
It is. No, I don't disagree with you. I'm laughing more at the social justiceness around this story.
Of course, yeah. I'm not saying it's not funny. It is very funny. I mean, but like ultimately, the man needs help.
A man does need help.
Not a laughing matter.
And not from a plastic surgeon. Stop it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the thing about this is that how many people shouted, she was born this way, he was born this way, this, you know, the transgender thing is not fluid, he wants to be a woman, and that's how he was born, that's how he was born, that's how he was born. So he was born that way, but now wants to be a way that he wasn't born. So now are we supposed to denounce the transition? Or, cause if he's born this way and now he's making a mistake? Or?
Yeah, but no, I mean, they're going to, I think they'll applaud the I think it's consistent for them to applaud the retransition because, like, what is the ultimate basis for this belief that transgenderism is valid? It's the belief that whim is the arbiter of the real and the unreal. It's what's real, it's whatever your whim decides. So whatever he's feeling, whatever pussy vagina, whatever he wants this week, that's what he should have.
What does the article say, regret? Does it define the regret anymore? Doesn't it talk about, like, social acceptance or something?
I don't know. I don't.
Or it's just the fact that
he doesn't want to think about this anymore.
It's just the fact that he wants to crush vagina. Is that what it is?
There's that. He also apparently was heard, you know, talking to himself on multiple occasions, like, what have I done to myself? What did I do? He's depressed.
Boobs, but only on other people.
I mean, he could be the first, like, halfie. Right?
I think that's
like,
no, there's plenty like, of, there, apparently you haven't been to the internet, sir.
I don't mean just genitalia, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, like, full on, like if you've ever seen anyone do a solo from Victor Victoria in a talent show, you probably haven't, that's really obscure,
yes.
Where they, like, one half of their body is completely a woman and the other half is completely a man. Like split.
Oh, you're talking
down
about
nose,
like when those football
middle.
Fans like have half of their body in one jersey and half in the other.
Yeah, a house divided. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He could have like a wang divided.
God, don't even say that.
And he could just, you know, whatever he felt like that morning, he could turn that side to people. He'd be like, I'm Caitlin. I'm Bruce. I run a marathon.
A wang divided cannot
like
stand.
That in something. That's, you know, that's like good cop, bad cop in the Lego movie.
It's kind of like Two-Face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A cross between Two-Face and good cop, bad cop from the Lego movie.
Yeah. There are other absurd things in the world though. This is because we are now accelerating fast into the most absurd story of the week. This is up there, I think. This is gonna rank in the annals of, not the anals, Bruce, in the annals of Farstum, I believe, which is an MIT event which happened on May 9th via the Ecology and Justice Forum in Global Studies and Languages. And the program was a lecture called Is Islamophobia Accelerating Global Warming? One more time. Is Islamophobia, the fear of Muslims, accelerating global warming. All right. As we do from time to time, we like to read the abstracts of these nonsense papers in their entirety. Laughing merrily all the way.
This is like an episode of The Tick where they just merge two random concepts together and then make an episode out of it. Like whales and cross-country running. There, go. Make a cartoon out of that.
By the way, this talk is by Ghassan Hajj, who is a future generation professor in the School of Philosophy, Anthropology, and Social Inquiry.
Wouldn't it have been better if Caitlyn Jenner gave this talk based upon what we were just saying?
Yes. I mean, talk about things that are just smushed together that have no meaning whatsoever, in my opinion. The School of Philosophy, Anthropology, and Social Inquiry? What the fuck are those three things doing together?
I think we're seeing a theme here. It's just a merging of shit for no reason.
Future generations, professor. Yeah, go teach some future kids, you bastard. Okay.
Right, like
what
he's a future
he is? What if he's from the past and we don't even know it?
That's what I was gonna say. But he's from the future, Justin. He hasn't even been born yet.
Yes, listen, Marty,
right,
here we go.
Let's read the abstract.
Okay, this is the abstract. This talk examines the relation between Islamophobia as the dominant form of racism today, except that it's not, and the ecological crisis. It looks at three common ways in which two phenomena are seen to be linked as an entanglement of two crises, metaphorically related with one being a source of imagery for the other, and both originating in colonial forms of capitalist accumulation. Did anyone get that?
They always
have to
throw in capitalism. It's always capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, so this is like a Marxist, this is a Marxist dialectic analysis of
all
this
of
situation.
It is critical theory, yes.
Yeah.
This talk proposes a fourth way of linking the two, an argument that they are both emanating from a similar mode of being.
Okay, there you go.
Or enmeshment in the world, what is referred to as generalized domestication. None of those words together mean anything. I just want to point that out.
That's when those a dog is words. Like, it's generalized domestication. That's when the dog, like, still kind of poops in the house sometimes, but generally, he's all right.
I was going to say, this. It sounds more like our pets are the source of global warming, is what I'm hearing.
An argument that they are both emanating from a similar mode of being or enmeshment in the world, what is referred to as generalized domestication. So, that's all nonsense. But I looked up the word enmeshment because I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? It's a psychological term. It's a term from psychology. Enmeshment is a description of a relationship between two or more people in which personal boundaries are permeable and unclear. This often happens on an emotional level in which two people feel each other's emotions, quote unquote, or when one person becomes emotionally escalated and the other family member does as well. So he believes that...
Like empathy, basically?
No. I think what they're saying is people's lack of empathy is what's doing it. So they're saying that by feeling what you feel so strongly that the other person doesn't matter, by saying that the Islamic people doesn't matter. What they're basically saying is what they always fucking say, right? This is the same theory they always say. I'm sorry, I'm getting real here. I know we're ha ha ha, we're laughing. But this is the reality of what they always say. All of these critical theories always say the same thing, which is the irony here that I always point out. They always say that capitalism makes us so individualistic that we become narcissistic. That's their argument. But the irony is that their belief system of constant comparison makes everyone narcissistic. That's the difference here. That's what they're basically arguing is capitalism, which is all of American culture as they're seeing it, is the greatest evil because it encourages individualism, which encourages narcissism. That's what they're saying. Because they're saying that the individualism causes us not to care about the environment. And, you know, that same individualism causes us to be afraid of Islam because we see them as threats and we don't empathize with them in their different religion.
This professor of future generations couldn't foresee that we would mock the fuck out of this ridiculous talk. Not much.
Dude, if you've ever been to a philosophy department, there's no end to the insanity that they're willing to believe. Like they are unable to imagine the way a normal person would look at this. And as you know, this confused me until I realized that critical theory is involved, and nothing will surprise me after that paper transgressing the boundaries when the guy just like threw in a bunch of like crazy words together. He did the random word generator and then got the paper published in many philosophy journals.
Nothing surprises me after several episodes ago when we did the Are Glaciers Racist or Sexist? Are Glaciers Sexist article. Yes.
Towards a glacial heteronormity or something, some shit like that.
If you remember, we already did the opposite of this. So now we're saying is Islamophobia accelerating global warming? Well, we also did the previous article, is global warming causing ISIS? So now it's a cycle.
So,
it's a self-perpetuating cycle. We've created perpetual motion using Islam and global warming.
Wow, we should harness
God.
That energy.
Global warming is causing global warming. That's what we've learned.
Well, to be fair, we may have talked about this before, but they make their women wear all those fucking clothes in the really hot desert. So if it gets warmer, the women get more angry. And we know what happens to a society when the women get bitchier.
Bruce Jenner?
No, it's just like what Ray says in that show Generation Kill. It becomes a failed state. The number one cause of failed states, according to Ray from Generation Kill, is the lack of good, available pussy. That is what will cause a failed state.
Man, that's what's going on in California, I'll tell you that.
TMI. So, I want to read a little bit of
when Harrison Ford has to be with Calista Flockhart, there's a problem, alright?
That's true. That's
Calista
true. Sorry,
Flockhart? Is that just like a rearrangement of the dude from Harry Potter who would make people forget things?
She is a real, you know, tenth of a person. Look her up. Okay.
Speaking of people who are only a tenth of a person.
People who make minimum wage. Oh, is that not where we're going with this?
Oh. It would have been funnier if you said two-thirds of a person, James.
No, no, dude, it's three-fifths. Get the fraction right.
Fuck, I'm bad at math.
Wendy's serves up big kiosk expansion as wage hikes hit fast food, investors.com reports. In the oldest sounding headline we've read ever on this show. Okay.
So probably the best, then.
Yes. Wendy's said that self-service ordering kiosks will be made available across its 6,000 plus restaurants in the second half of the year as minimum wage hikes and a tight labor market push up wages. It will be up to franchisees whether to deploy the labor-saving technology, but Wendy's president Todd Penegor did note that some franchise locations have been raising prices to offset wage hikes. So congratulations, Fight for 15 people. You have reached the actual minimum wage, which is $0.
Nice.
Well, haven't they reached the maximum minimum wage? So now they figured out what the carrying capacity is for their minimum wage, when they will start being replaced by robots.
I wish they were being replaced by robots. They're being replaced by essentially an iPad.
Just a giant-ass iPad.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations.
I like this. I actually really like this. Number one, I hate dealing with people, with cashiers at the front. I want to order from an iPad. If I'm going to a fine restaurant and he's having me smell the wine cork and everything, I want a guy serving me. Anything lower than that, just give me the goddamn food. I want to push a button and give me the fucking food. I don't want to deal with someone. Whenever I'm at Ralph's, I go to the line where you check out with the machine yourself, even if I know it's going to take me longer. I just don't like dealing with people if I don't have to. Number two, this is exactly what they deserve. So I love this. Everything they deserve.
Makes me want to eat Wendy's. No, it doesn't. It actually doesn't.
It actually does make me want to eat Wendy's. Yeah, okay. I'll go there and to touch.
Get me some Wendy's and a case of America.
I mean, I'm with James on this one. That's what I was saying when I was like the maximum minimum wage. Didn't they realize this was what was going to happen? Like, if they can figure out a way to not pay $15 an hour for these employees, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
You're forgetting the principle, though, here, is that the next step is that they're going to pass a law that says you cannot either employ these labor-saving devices or you institute some kind of law that basically says – the upper management of the company has to take the pay hit, because at the end of the day, they're not thinking about the actual laws of economics. They're just saying we the poor people should have more money and the people who run the business should have less money. And so the next step is, of course, they're going to reshuffle the pay scales so that they can maintain their profits while, you know, these laborers, of course, get screwed over by these laws. But the finger is going to be pointed at the management one way or another. And we're going to see this is how controls breed controls, is that they will be blamed based on the moral premise our society accepts.
Right, because what you just described is with Directive 10289. Is that the number in the book? Did I get the number right?
You did get the number right.
Fuck yes.
Ding, 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 ding. You win the Rand Prize. Ding, 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 ding.
That's really good. We should implement that. That should be one of our year-end awards, the Rand Prize.
Yeah.
Now it's I get like to collect Social Security and have everyone hate me for it.
So spoiler alert on the Atlas Shrugged novel. Directive 10289 is when basically these regulations just keep building on each other and building and building until finally the dictator of America says, he just says like, okay, I can't keep track of all this shit. Everyone just needs to stay economically still. There can't be any inventions, no patents. No one can leave their job. No one can enter a new job. No new jobs can be created. Just, we need the economy to just be still for a moment. Just
and that's what
be
I was
still.
Specifically referring to was the whole idea of you can't fire anyone. No jobs can be lost and no jobs can be created. Cause that's the point you're at when you're saying you can't have machines do jobs. You're basically saying that job can never go away. So we're always going to need a milk delivery person or an ice delivery person because we can't have refrigerators.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's where this is going. Sorry.
To James's point, like, they know the people are implementing this minimum wage stuff, they know it doesn't make sense. Recently, the California raised minimum wage. Jerry Brown, There is no clearer statement here. He said to the Sacramento Bee, quote, economically, minimum wages may not make sense, but morally and socially and politically, they make every sense
because
because it binds the community together.
Oh my God. Fuck Jerry Brown in his brown hole.
Peace out, California. It was a good run. You had a good run, California.
He starts the sentence admitting it makes no economic sense. And then goes on and says, but I mean, I'm signing it.
The deeper principle here that's going on here, sorry, I'm stealing James's line when I'm saying the deeper principle, but it's just saying reality doesn't matter. Morality is contrary to reality. Think about that. The governor of California is basically up there saying, in order to be a moral person, you must not live in line with reality.
Yeah.
That's fucking terrifying. That's terrifying.
Yes, it is terrifying.
No wonder Caitlyn Jenner's having such a hard fucking time.
Literally, a hard time fucking. Yeah.
James, she can't identify reality. Nobody can identify reality.
Yeah, if that's contradictory, you know, it's only logical that other things might be contradictory too, I guess. Speaking of things that have nothing to do with reality and just have continuous contradictions in them.
It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. All right, let's start out this week with taking down some trailers here. We got three trailers. The third one Daniel's just going to talk about, but the first two, I'll let everyone have a say. So the first one is Kevin Smith's next movie. Of course, his last movie was the one where Justin Long or someone got turned into some weird creature or something. I don't know. Kevin Smith's doing these weird horror movies. But this one's called Yoga Hosers, and it stars Kevin Smith's daughter, who's named Harley Quinn Smith, and it stars Johnny Depp's daughter. And then also Johnny Depp's in it. So you know Johnny Depp's only in this movie because Kevin Smith promised his daughter a starring role. So you guys watched the trailer. What did you think of this?
Kaska fuck. yoga hosers.
What could that possibly mean?
All I know is that it introduced me to the concept of bratsies. Which are miniature Nazis made of bratwurst.
Okay, so what you're pointing out right now is Kevin Smith does this thing. And if you haven't noticed, it said Smodcast Productions on it. So basically imagine if somebody just did a bunch of movies based upon the random nonsense we say on this podcast. And now imagine they're less objective than we are. And now you understand how Kevin Smith makes movies now.
I think I also understand critical theory at this point.
Yes. So it's a movie where two girls trying to get invited to a high school boys' party learn that bratsies exist, and then a creepy dressed up Johnny Depp says he has to help them save the day. That's what I got from the trailer.
He's like a world famous bounty hunter or some shit, or like he gets magical creatures? I don't know.
Also, there's yoga.
It takes place in Canada. That's why they're called hosers.
Makes sense. I'd rather watch a stoner movie. That makes more sense than this nonsense. I'd rather watch something by Darren Aronofsky. That's how terrible this looks.
Ooh, those are fighting words.
Terrible. Kevin Smith, when did you go off the deep end? Because seriously. First, a fucking guy turns into a walrus. And
that
then
was what I was
this.
Looking for. Tusk. Walrus. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
James, anything to add?
I don't know. I mean, Daniel said some things that were apparently plot points that were apparent from this trailer. I absorbed nothing but sheer entropy from this trailer. It was just disorder incarnate. So let's move on.
All right, well, I'll let you go first with the next one because it's a video game movie trailer. On the Jimmy Kimmel Show, they premiered the Assassin's Creed trailer. This movie stars Michael Fassbender, a.k.a. Magneto, and it's based on the hit video game franchise about...
A.k.a. Steve Jobs.
Does he play Steve Jobs?
He does, yeah.
What if Steve
you
Jobs
didn't
could
notice?
Be, what if Steve Jobs That's... could bend metal?
You didn't notice that he fucking could in that movie. You didn't know he was ripped as hell.
Any movie that was about Steve Jobs.
That took me out of the movie.
I
was watching the movie and I'm like, wow, Steve Jobs could like totally break that guy in half right now and he's dying of cancer. So, all right.
Steve Jobs looks like he should be in battle against Persians in Sparta.
Yeah. Take some, you know, some hints from Christian Bale there, Fassbender. Why don't you lose a little? Little weight there to do your movie. I don't. Okay. Anyway.
So yeah, so, it stars Magneto, and it's based on the hit video game franchise Assassin's Creed, which is about a group of assassins, a secret society of assassins, doing assassin things throughout time.
Right. When I saw this Michael Fassbender in Assassin's Creed, I thought this was I thought this would be amazing. I just Magneto. As Michael Fassbender in X-Men First Class is my favorite superhero. You know, seeing this, I don't know. It just, I can tell it's going to be stupid. I'm not sure. There was some intangible, I was so ready to love the shit out of this, and there was something just intangibly stupid about this. I hate to say it. It's just like, I can tell it's gonna be bad, and I'm not sure why.
Well, I can tell you what it was.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to identify whatever it was I was feeling, probably.
So, the first, like, 30 seconds to a minute of it, I don't know, because in after this point, I just completely zoned out. It's just pure expositional dialogue, and it's really bad expositional dialogue. Then, it's about, I don't even know how long, a minute and a half of just action with no sort of story or anything. He's just like running around and like doing shit. And then I don't even remember the ending. So
astute summary, sir.
The end is he jumps off a building.
Yeah, okay. And that's the point
of
it.
Yeah, which is a thing from the video game. You can, like, do a swan dive into, like, a bale of hay, but they made it fucking ridiculous. Like, they're like, oh, dude, we gotta do that thing from the video game. So every nerd is gonna watch this and they're like, oh my god, he's jumping just like in the video game! I don't know, fuck it, go on.
Right, so there's no depth here. There's no conflict here. It's just like, hey, here's a guy dressed like an assassin in ancient Spain fighting people. I mean, this trailer... featured such epic lines as, like, what do you want? Your past. And then, welcome to the Spanish Inquisition.
Which no one expected, by the way.
I did not expect the Spanish Inquisition. I didn't. Maybe it's because I haven't played the game, but I did not expect it. But it was still a fucking horrible line.
So this trailer, I to give it the benefit of the doubt, this trailer was made for two people. Two people.
Wait, I want to interrupt you because I also loved how the trailer opens up with, you just died. You were executed. You were erased from the world. And it's like, no, he's sitting right there.
Yeah, clearly not dead. Okay. There we go. False premise. Okay. It was made for, I believe it was probably made for like hardcore fans of Assassin's Creed, which is a game I've never played. I hear it's a little social justice-y, but I that's a rumor. I know nothing about it. And then the other person it was made for is my fiance. Because this is a movie she's going to watch the shit out of numerous times. This is her ideal movie. It is all action and a hot guy as the main character. She will watch any fucking movie on the planet that is 98.7% action and stars a hot guy. It is essentially crack for my fiance. Yes. You know what other movie she really fucking loved that she watched, I think, three times in theaters and now owns? Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
They already made a movie out of that?
Yes. It is an action movie that stars a hot guy.
Is it any good?
I've never watched it. I have no interest. It's just her ideal genre of film. She loved it so much that she went and watched other versions of Pride and Prejudice and was wildly disappointed.
Well, of course. I mean, everything else sucks, Pride and Prejudice.
Because there was no action and no hot guys.
She's like, when do they get to the fucking and killing? Like, what's going on?
I mean,
why are they just all lovey-dovey?
Aren't you thinking that the entire time you read Pride and Prejudice? Like, where's the fucking?
All Jane Austen novels? Yes.
Yeah.
Can you please just fuck? Please? Please? Yeah.
I mean, how much of the conflict of Pride and Prejudice would be resolved if they just fucked? They would fucking be like, you know what? We really didn't like each other. It was alright. Move on.
I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but there was a site that I used to love sort of pre things going viral internet era called Book a Minute, which was 1 minute summaries of all classic novels. And they had all the novels like Moby Dick and A Tale of Two Cities and et cetera. And then you get down to the collected works of Jane Austen as one entry. And the summary of the entirety of the collected works of Jane Austen was, female lead loves male lead. He must never find out. Male lead loves female lead. She must never find out. They find out. Yeah.
So. Oh, God. So if there are any women who listen to this, I'm sure they won't anymore.
Women listening to this podcast. It's hilarious.
Well, if they're still listening after that, call me. All right, final trailer. Ice Age Collision Course. We're going to toss it to our animation expert.
Dan. Sucks. Move on.
How is this franchise still going?
Ice Age always bugged the shit out of me with the stupid raccoon looking for his nut and all that bullshit.
The plot of this movie is, oh my God, the squirrel with a nut finds a crashed UFO and gets launched into space.
While Thus Spake Zarathustra is playing.
Where he blows up a meteor, thus sending pieces of it raining onto Earth, thus causing the Age of Extinction. This is the crappiest possible children's movie. Please, if you have young people who are in your care instead, do not abuse them by taking them to this film. Have them go see any Pixar movie, any DreamWorks movie that's not this shitty nonsense. Basically anything. Just please do not give these people more money. Enough already.
But to James's point, don't you want to see what new places the squirrel can look for his nut in?
Yeah, a UFO in space.
Is that where he goes this time?
Yes, I just told you. He literally finds a UFO and launches it into space. Like, that is the plot of the film. That's not hyperbole.
He rams into the moon in complete defiance of the second law of, or the law of conservation of momentum, too. That was a thing.
And also the John Leguizamo character is awkward. So, shock and awe.
I always fucking felt bad. I felt bad he couldn't get his nut. I felt bad.
Yeah, you can empathize.
Yeah,
I hate it when I can't get my nut, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Families, instead of going to see this schlock, just re-rent the Lego movie.
Or rent Rise of the Guardians on Blu-ray, which everyone should have seen by now.
There you go. One of the most underrated animations of all time, Rise of the Guardians.
One of the most underrated movies of all time.
We may have to do a series on the mid-side most underrated movies of all time.
I thought we already did that. Isn't it called the Snyder Series?
Thank you. See how I set you up for that?
Yeah, that was an easy one.
It's like a T-ball game right there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's hit some news here.
All right.
The first thing I want to talk about here is, after weeks of controversy, Castle has finally been canceled after 8 seasons. So... No. The Social Justice Warriors are out and they're trying to destroy Nathan Fillion's career. It came out a couple weeks ago that Stana Kotick, who plays the female lead Beckett in this show, her contract wasn't renewed, as well as Lainey's. And there were all these stories that came out that Stana was always crying in her dressing room between takes because her and Nathan Fillion couldn't get along, and that they had to go to couples counseling and everything. They played the two romantic leads on the show. I don't know, it's all very strange to me. Like, I tried to Google, like, Nathan Fillion being a dick and, like, Nathan Fillion jerk. I could find no stories on the internet.
Hate to see what came up in the image search for that.
Did not click image search, but I tried to find examples of Nathan Fillion being a jerk, and I couldn't find any. So you would think if there were some stories out there in this day and age, they would have been on the internet. So I don't get this whole thing about it's Nathan Fillion's fault somehow. James actually stayed over last Monday, and he was like, why are you watching Castle? Which is ironic because it's the second to last episode now. And I was like, oh, I like Nathan Fillion, so I watch it for that. To me, he made the show. I've seen every episode. I'm sad to see it go after 8 seasons. But this whole sort of controversy around Nathan Fillion is weird. And I think he's handled it gracefully by not addressing it and just being very professional about it. Which to me shows the issue isn't him.
I watched the first 2 seasons and I enjoyed them. And then I just sort of went, yeah, I get it. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, I mean, it is the same thing over and over again. It's just Nathan Fillion being Nathan Fillion.
Yeah. And them sort of, you know, not fucking, maybe fucking, not fucking, maybe fucking, not fucking.
Yeah.
Okay, fucking. Oh, not fucking again. Yeah.
That is sort of a summary of Castle.
It is a less interesting, romantic version of House Cuddy.
Yes. Again, if you enjoy Nathan Fillion, you'll enjoy the show. You know, it got 8 seasons. I think that's a miracle. I mean, I guess we traded 8 seasons of Firefly for 8 seasons of Castle. So, guess if you're going to have Nathan Fillion on your show, it's going to get canceled.
That does not make me feel any better at all. Why would you ever say it that way?
For exactly that reaction from the Browncoats. All right. Now we've got some news of the upcoming season for the fall. The first one is, I included this one in here because it's right in Daniel's wheelhouse, I think. This is a live-action animated show, so it's a mix, sort of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who we know from the directors and writers of the Lego Movie, and they also did 21 and 22 Jump Street. And it's called Son of Zorn, and it's about a animated, like, He-Man type character who is in, like, a regular sitcom. He, like, works in an office and everything.
He looks like the Thundercats guy if you retire.
Yeah, he does! Oh my god!
He looks like Lino.
Oh!
Yeah, if he retired and let himself go a little, yeah.
So he became more human than Lion?
Yeah. You know how I bitch on this show all the time about originality, originality. Don't make a remake. Just give me something new.
Yeah, I figured you'd appreciate this.
Yeah, I do. Just not this. Like anything else. Like, just hit redo.
I don't know. I'd watch this.
I'd give it the pilot, certainly. I cannot see how they're going to make this work, but
it seems like it would be good for like a couple episodes. Just, I mean, they can't rely on just this one joke of like, one of the parts of the movie, the first Thor movie I really liked is, you know, the sort of fish out of water scenarios where it's like, he's used to sort of being in a mystical, magical kingdom. So he, you know, he goes into the pet shop. He says, I need a horse. And then, you know, he says, oh, all we have is just gerbils. And he says, well, then find me one of those large enough to ride. There's only so long they're going to be able to keep those jokes going.
Such Kenneth Branagh humor. My God. Yeah.
Well, I'm actually going to argue, Daniel, that it's not that original. What is going to be the difference between this and the Muppets sitcom? Wasn't the entire Muppets sitcom the exact joke James just said?
This will be canceled sooner. Is that the difference?
The only reason the other one wasn't canceled was because they gave because they were the Muppets, they were able to negotiate a 1-season deal.
They got like 13 episodes or something, didn't they?
Hold on, I'll Google.
It's canceled now.
Yes, it's canceled, but I think they got a full first season.
Oh, I've only watched up to like 12 or 13, and then I didn't know new ones came out, but yeah, I will give it a try because it's animation and the sitcom, which I appreciate.
Yeah, it got 16. The Muppets got 16 episodes.
Yeah, there you go.
But I mean, so you know, you're asking for originality, and this appears to fit the bill. But I mean, it's an original idea of, you know, I mean, I've certainly never heard of a sitcom involving He-Man in an office environment. But it's just like, okay, but like, have we had sitcoms in office environments where someone,
well,
where there's like a twist, like, you know, Archer, you know, I mean,
So this is more like the family environment. This is sort of like He-Man meets Modern Family. Because the office environment thing, I think the superhero one that was done with that, which is sort of bizarrely good, is Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, where I think it was Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network took the character of Birdman and made him, like, retire and get his JD. And, like, his whole thing was, like, fighting for justice in the court of law. That was really clever.
All these things you guys are naming are Adult Swim shows. So doesn't this kind of seem like an Adult Swim show on Fox?
It does, a little bit. It does. By the way, the Harvey Birdman is where I get the thing where I relentlessly mock you, Justin, for when you email me something and then text me to ask if I got the email and then message me on GChat to ask if I got your text about the thing you emailed me. Because there was a character who was a pink hippopotamus or purple hippopotamus who would just appear randomly in obscure places where Harvey Birdman was, often, you know, while he was having sex or in the bathroom, and just ask him, did you get that thing I sent you?
That's right!
Did you? And like, there are just scenes where he's like getting on a helicopter, and he's like, I only have one thing to say!
My ultimate plan is to have so many notifications on your phone go off that your phone will just blow up.
True. Then you'll send me a carrier pigeon to ask if my phone blew up from you sending me all those things you sent me. But
right.
Yes.
That would be the ultimate punchline.
Indeed.
The carrier pigeon has a note on it, but then he also drops headphones on your head and you hear beep, 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 beep.
A literal tweet, yes.
Okay. The CW also has a couple new shows. I'm putting new in CW.
Nude?
Quotes. Yeah, nude. I wish. They got some hot people on the CW. But the first is Supergirl, Elliot's beloved show, has been moved from CBS to the CW. And then they have created a show based upon Archie called Riverdale.
So this is Archie the comic, not like Archie Bunker, the racist white sitcom guy.
No, although someone in an internet comment section said the only Archie we need on this show is Archie Bunker. So
it's true. Side note, watched this documentary series about the 70s, and one of them was about television. Fucking A, you could never put that on television today. Ever. It would be immediately canceled for being wildly racist and inappropriate. Yet the whole point of it was satirizing racists.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I love Archie Bunker. Go ahead.
So that's your takeaway from Riverdale, is you love Archie Bunker.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about Archie. Are there still human beings reading Archie comics? If so, who are they? So we can put some sort of golden shape on their arm and then send them to camps. Because seriously...
I didn't even, maybe a golden jug, you can put a golden jug on them. I didn't even know that Garfield was still being made. I thought Jim Davis was dead.
Everyone assumed that once Charles Schultz died, all comics died. All people who make
yes,
comic strips.
100%, yes. Except Marmaduke, because that's just going to go on forever.
Oh, that silly dog.
James, do you have any opinions on Riverdale or Supergirl?
No!
Okay, then. So, to end this segment, we're going to turn to a movie that we have to give a couple weeks because we gave a couple weeks of coverage, and I mean like 6 years of coverage, to Batman vs. Superman. So I want to talk about Civil War a little bit more. There's a couple articles here. One was sent to me by Daniel last week. Right after we recorded, he's like, did we miss an article here? Like, I feel like we should defend the movie a little bit. So first we're going to defend the movie, and then I'm going to attack the movie. So in the defense of the movie, this first article is in Vanity Fair, and it says, is this the one flaw in the otherwise great Captain America Civil War?
I remember this now.
And
okay.
The one flaw is that, this is really funny because this is like a joke I like to make all the time as a joke. Like, this is the same thing Daniel was just saying about we can't satirize racism because people will get offended by it. The one flaw is apparently that Steve Rogers and Bucky, Captain America and the Winter Soldier, are not gay lovers.
I thought it was going to be
you
that.
You mean they confirmed it when he smooches, Peggy, the new Peggy?
Yes, Sharon Carter, yes.
I thought you were going to say that his name wasn't Captain Budweiser. That's what I thought you were going to say. But they're seriously pissed that Iron Man, wait, no, that Bucky and the Cap aren't doing it. Like, that was what they thought was the biggest flaw of this piece of shit movie. Really?
Oh, it wasn't a piece of shit.
It was. It was garbage. I didn't even see it. It was garbage.
That's right. You didn't even see it. Dude, it was good. What? Not Batman, not as good as Batman versus Superman. Like, it didn't really have much depth to it, but like, I'll say this. It was a Marvel movie. It had a plot. There was a point. They did that. And then I understood what happened at the end. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, that was resolved. But there's still some stuff left. So maybe they'll make another one. And I'll be okay when they do that.
Well, I would argue there wasn't any resolution.
I think what's happening here is, like, Marvel has raped my expectations so many times that I'm happy when we just get to, when I just get away scot-free with just a BJ and that's it.
By the way, I did not see Civil War, but my fiance Fiza did. I will read you her review of Civil War.
This is awesome.
Quote, it was like watching two kids fight over a toy in a fucking sandbox. It didn't mean anything. No real drama. The entire situation could have been resolved if the two had, fucking talked to each other. The problem came when Captain America, for some fucking stupid reason, wants to save his murderer, quote, friend more than he wants to listen to his real fucking friends. And there's no fucking resolution to anything. Also, the bad guy has no moral high ground. His reasoning is fucking stupid for doing what he does. End of review.
Right, and that's what I said last week about the bad guys. Everyone was complaining about Lex Luthor and Batman versus Superman, saying what he did made no sense. But what Zemo did in this really made no sense. He's just like, I want you guys to fight because you fucking made me mad or some shit.
Oh, because his family got killed
in
Slovakia.
Yeah, his family got killed in Slovakia or wherever.
Yeah.
Souvlakia. It's like, it's a country dedicated to the Greek shish kebabs. You know what else? What did bother me about Civil War is that the entire conflict, every single conflict in the entire movie for every single character could have been resolved if you gave them like a 5-minute philosophical speech on the nature of agency. You would just say like, no, Tony, that the death wasn't your fault. You were trying to save people. It was Ultron who caused the chaos and is therefore responsible for anyone you didn't manage to save.
Okay, so now what you're getting at...
Oh, now I don't have to be guilty. Like, no one uses reason at all.
Okay, and that's what I'm getting at, James. You've exactly hit on what I'm about to respond to here.
And so, that's what Fiza's argument was, by the way, as well.
Right, and I'm actually going to take that argument and I'm going to actually make it even worse. So, and what I mean is it's going to be a better argument, but I'm going to make what you guys are saying more extreme.
So are we still defending the film?
No, we're done defending
the film. I still defend the film.
They should not be gay lovers. Fun. That is gay that they should be gay lovers.
That is naturalistic bullshit.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
And to be fair, Marvel's opening them up to the naturalism, and I'm going to explain how here. So when we talked about Batman vs. Superman, Screen Rant had this great post defending Batman vs. Superman and explaining what a lot of it was about. And they got to the end where they were wrong because they thought Superman was self-sacrificing when he wasn't. But they were basically right about everything else, about the role of women, about the conflict that was going on. Same thing here. They've identified what's going on in Captain America Civil War. They got it. They nailed it. But again, they're wrong. And that they think it's what makes it great. What they say makes Civil War great is actually what makes it really bad. And I think this is really revealing of our society and revealing of our art and our storytelling. So I want to read a couple paragraphs here from the article, and then I want to respond to them. So here we go. This is from the article. What truly hits hard about Civil War's ending is that it fully commits to the futility and deflating pointlessness of this final brawl without any qualifiers or moral escape hatches. Zemo hasn't tricked anybody. The tape isn't doctored. Everyone is on the same page as everyone else. Stark is 100% aware that Bucky was effectively being remote-controlled during the killing, and he and the audience hear Cap explain that, while he did learn that Hydra had assassinated Howard and Maria Stark during the events of the Winter Soldier, he did not know that Bucky himself had done the deed. I'm going to pause here for a second. This is what James is talking about the speech of moral agency, right? Well, Bucky didn't do it. He's not responsible. Don't kill him. Continuing, the cards are all out on the table, very clearly indicating that, by both moral and narrative logic, these guys should not fight. And they fight anyway, because they're angry. And because Zemo was only able to break the Avengers in half because they were already starting to crack. Because all that pent-up pain has to go somewhere, and because humans and their emotion-driven responses, I'm going to read that one more time, humans and their emotion-driven responses can't be held completely in check by even the most well-meaning attempts at regulation. Even as
Wait. This is positive. This is a positive review. I had to just double back on this. This is actually supposed. Sorry, go on. Fuck.
Right.
This is why it's great. Works. Yes.
This is why the ending works. Even as Cap tries one more time to make Iron Man listen to reason about not murdering Bucky Barnes, when Stark responds with, "I don't care. He killed my mom." We understand where he's coming from. And while all the reason and logic
he really
in the world,
says that. Hold on.
He really says
that.
He delivers the line a little less lamely than it appears here.
That is as bad of a line, though, as Martha.
It's worse. The world won't stop him. Any more than the Accords could have stopped Captain America from conducting his vigilante superhero work. So, what this is, and what they're arguing for, is that the essential of the human condition is emotionalism. And that's why this ending works, which of course goes into naturalism, where the world is just around you and all these characters are just reacting. And this is really bad, because what Marvel has essentially done, and what this person is arguing for, is saying all of these superheroes are psychologically damaged, and that's why this works. The only reason Iron Man would want to fight under these conditions, Tony Stark would want to fight under these conditions, is if he's so psychologically damaged over his parents' death, that he has to react in this way. Same thing with Captain America. The only reason he would want to defend Bucky in this way, and this is why they're trying to say it's because he's gay, is if he was irrationally, emotionally connected, psychologically damaged from his change through time and his loss of all his friends and everything. So Marvel has essentially created a bunch of psychologically damaged superheroes. Now, contrast that with Batman versus Superman. Batman was psychologically damaged. That was the entire point. And Superman was dealing with trying not to become psychologically damaged. So whereas Batman versus Superman, we see characters trying to overcome issues and not be psychologically damaged, we're saying what makes Civil War good is the contrast where these people just embrace the fact that they're psychologically damaged and beat the shit out of each other over it. That's a good story.
And I think that's a horrible story. And I think that was, to put an intellectual spin on Faiz's review of the movie about the whole no drama aspect of it, that's why, according to her, the ending fight didn't feel like there had any meaning to it whatsoever. There was nothing that was going to be resolved by that fight. They were just beating the shit out of each other to beat the shit out of each other.
Right. It's
I
like
mean,
when
to me, it was, I don't know, man. To me, I can see Captain America's position. I was just on Captain America's side. I'm like, oh, okay, Captain America is rational because he's trying to save Bucky. And because Bucky was not responsible for the murders he committed. And then Iron Man is just being a crazy emotionalist burdened with guilt. So that's where the drama came from me. It's like, okay, I'm rooting for Captain America.
Okay, two things. One, to Daniel's point, it's just like two drunk guys fighting in a bar. That's all it is. They're so drunk and psychologically damaged that they just get angry and beat the shit out of each other. That's what it is. And James, I'm going to disagree with you, where I think Captain America is equally psychologically damaged, where he doesn't want to take Bucky in. He doesn't want to say, hey, here's a guy who can be fucking mind-controlled, because Bucky's mind control was activated earlier in the movie when the guy said the secret passcode of, like, butt sex, pegging, whatever fucking else, and then Bucky told him all the secrets. So Bucky is rationally and legitimately not at fault, but at the same time, you have to take him in and figure out what's wrong with him. But no, Captain America just wants to run off with him to Rwanda or whatever the Black Panther's country is to protect it.
Suvlakistan.
They should get a room in a hotel. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I can see that, but I wasn't thinking about it too hard. So while I was watching it, I don't know. It seemed like Captain America was in the right because he was defending an innocent man.
Well,
that's how I saw it.
That's where they get you with emotionalism. Because if Captain America had said to Iron Man, okay, Tony, I get that you're mad. Like, yeah, he fucking killed your parents. But he was under mind control. So let's together take him in and make sure he doesn't do this to anyone else. Tony Stark, who, by the way, wasn't psychologically damaged before fucking Joss Whedon tried to make him self-sacrifice in the Avengers. And if you remember, Avengers or Iron Man 3 was all about him trying to get over his psychological damage. So I blame this all on Joss Whedon, even though it's everyone's fault, but I just like to blame Whedon. Maybe Iron Man in his rationality would have said, oh yeah, you know, that makes sense. You're right. And thank you because you are doing justice. Because you're saying, hey, this person did do wrong, and maybe it's not his fault, but let's figure it out so this doesn't happen to anyone else. And then they would have been the fucking Avengers. But then the response...
Right, even...
Go ahead.
Someone who is clinically insane who commits a murder still has to be removed from society.
Right.
Like, he may not be morally culpable, but he can't just be free to go wherever the fuck he wants.
Right. But the point that people are going
to
say in
response... I just chalked that all up to a plot hole, basically. I wasn't thinking like... Yeah, I'm serious. Like, I just wasn't thinking that way. I was just seeing... Bucky's innocent, everyone thinks he's guilty, Captain America's sticking up for him. I did not expect the movie to have that much actual, like, in-depth logic to it. And so there
was just
drama.
So shocked that the movie wasn't just a series of illogical vignettes that he forgave every inconsistency and plot hole.
Well, yeah, and of course the response to what we're saying is, people are going to say to us, there's no drama in what you guys are talking about. There's no tension in what you guys are talking about.
Well, write a better story.
Well, yeah, you'd have to write a completely different story if you did what Justin's talking about.
Right. Well, and it is. And the completely different story is called Batman versus Superman.
Just make the Avengers into Batman and Superman. And just make it Justice League.
All right. That's a great way to leave this here. So let's go on to further craziness in Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. First Reddit. Free love era. Romanticized or reality?
Oh. Interesting dichotomy set up.
I like the alliterative nature of it.
Usually you don't see romanticized or reality, but yeah, interesting. So they mean like the 60s free love craziness?
What they're talking about is, the reason I like this question is it sort of flips on its head, because everyone talks about how the 50s are romanticized, but they're not really reality. Well, now they're saying the same thing, where they're starting to look at the myth that's been perpetuated through culture, and they're looking at the myth that's been perpetuated through education, where everyone says the hippies were awesome and the free love movement was awesome. And they're asking and they're saying, was it awesome? Or are people making it out to be a bigger deal than it actually was?
So as someone who has the authority of having just watched an entire documentary series about the 60s, certainly the free love movement was revolutionary at the time, but by today's standards, it's not radical. I mean, essentially the quote unquote free love movement was essentially the idea that you could have sex before marriage and it not be taboo, and you could use contraception and not be looked at as a whore. You could change partners. You could have one night stands, which is all sort of commonplace nowadays. So it was revolutionary in a context, but you have to keep in mind that that was not the majority of people. It wasn't like you went from 1959 button up, leave it to beaver communities to 1960 orgies. Like, the vast majority of people were still very conservative in their sexual ideas, and they didn't necessarily take all of this seriously or look at it as a good thing, or even look at it as something that was permanent. So, and on the other hand, you have the hippies and the free love movement also spreading a ton of STDs and ending up in a lot of violence. Many of the free love music festivals, like Woodstock was the successful one, but there were others around the country that you don't hear about that ended in murders and death and lots of rape and horrible things happening. It is romanticized in a certain sense. Just not, you know, romanticized in the good art sense, I guess.
Well, I mean, they're using the same sort of association, but they're using the old definition of romanticized, where they talk about, you know, feelings are what's the most important thing, in the sense that we're going to celebrate the greatness of the human condition, and celebrating the feeling of that is what they're talking about. And that's what happens a lot, is they romanticize it in that way, where they act like, oh, it was this awesome time where everyone loved each other and there was peace. And there was actually the underbelly of what you just exposed, Daniel.
Yeah. So clearly revolutionary, but also not sort of some idyllic time, just like the 50s weren't some idyllic time, or the 40s. The 60s also had lots of problems. And my God, watch a documentary. The 60s fucking sucked. I would never want to be back in the 60s. It was horrible.
So let's put it this way. No time is idyllic. Every time has its pluses and minuses. Be wary of people who are telling you something's awesome or something's awful based upon their agenda. And people who support free love have an agenda.
And by the way, to say one other thing, like, if there was ever a time one wanted to live, it would be the present. Because we have technology and prosperity and medicine, and even going back to the 60s, a lot of things didn't exist back then, including a lot of cures for diseases that we take for granted now. So,
yeah, like self-serve kiosks at Wendy's.
That's right, bitches. No better time than the present to be alive.
As Penn Jillette says, throughout time, people have always been saying it's getting worse, but it's always been getting better.
Except during the Middle Ages.
They are a-changing.
Yeah, until we hit that second Dark Ages, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah.
Next Reddit. When I pass a student driver, I always wonder if I'm being used as an example.
Like, don't drive like that piece of shit.
I included this for one reason. Because I want to ask you guys. To me, this is just narcissism. When I pass a student driver, you want to know what I think? I better get two fucking lanes over in case they do something insane because they don't know what they're doing. Why is somebody's immediate thought, am I being used as an example? Like, you're that fucking important, they're going to point out your fucking car out of everyone
on
the road and be like,
look,
don't do that or do that? Fuck you.
My God, son, did you see his use of turn signal? It was glorious.
So much turn signal.
Yes.
Such laws, much obeyance.
I don't have any thoughts when I pass student drivers. I rarely notice them. I rarely notice anyone on the road, which may be dangerous. But
my only thought is like, oh, that's why they won't get out of my goddamn way.
See, even that's more rational than I'm going to be used as an example.
I just remember when I was a student driver, we had the sort of most Prussian sort of militaristic driving instructor you could possibly imagine. And I don't know why he graded on a 5-point scale, because sorry, I almost choked to death just then.
It's Goodell.
He graded on a 5-point scale, but everything was a 1/10 of a point deduction. And if you got lower than a 4.98, you failed for the day. So why grade on a 5-point scale? That's retarded.
Well, what happens if you failed like 3 days in a row?
You couldn't fail more than 3 days of driving out of the 8 days of driving.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
When I learned how to drive, my dad took me to a cemetery because I couldn't kill anyone there. That's a definition of a dad joke.
Literally.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, want to do the last Reddit?
Please.
When a girl says she's not your typical girl, that's in scare quotes, it makes me think she's a pretty typical girl.
Huh. How about that?
But she just said she wasn't.
James, were you really shocked by this, or are you being facetious?
No, I'm being completely feces, because, like, like, when I look at OkCupid, one thing that I found when I was back when I was on OkCupid is, like, was how many girls would say, would describe themselves as sarcastic. And it made me wonder, like, are they being sarcastic about the fact that they're sarcastic? Because so many girls are saying this. Is this like an inside joke where they're like, let's say we're sarcastic? And so that leads to sort of a liar paradox in and of itself. But after a while, I realized, like, oh, wait, they actually think that it's, like, a big deal that, like, they're sarcastic. Or another one is like, I'm a total nerd. And then I'm scrolling through their pictures, and it's just them, like, drinking. It's just pictures of them drinking. I'm like, all right, I see no indication that you're a nerd. Like,
they do
you know,
I'm secretly a nerd thing. But deep
down,
I'm a
nerd. But they all do. That. Yeah, deep down, I'm playing with action figures and stuff. Well, what do you mean you're a nerd?
They watched Marvel movies.
It's awesome.
Right. It means they would blow Tony Stark, is what I was going to say. Yeah.
That's exactly what it means.
Sarcastic is to bitchy as curvy is to fat.
Ooh,
by
that's
the way.
A good one.
That's what those words mean. When they say sarcastic, they mean I'm a bitch. And, I'm just gonna call it sarcasm. So.
I was gonna say, it's like, that's like saying like, I like to tell jokes with my friends. It's like, well, who the fuck does? Like, I thought they were just telling me that they use sarcastic humor. I'm like, well, who the fuck doesn't do that? So, like,
I also have a face.
It's totally a cover-up, you're right.
My favorite thing to breathe is oxygen. Oh, I guess that makes me nerdy.
Well, the interesting thing is there's, like, a hive mind here of, like, they all put the same things in.
Yeah.
Like what James is talking about.
It's all the same excuse, and they don't realize, like, we know the lingo. We at least know it's a little weird. And we know something not fishy is going on.
Yeah.
Well, here's my question. I have a question for the inverse one, right? So if you say, like, I'm not a typical girl, and that makes you a typical girl, how do you tell someone that you're not normal?
Well, I suspect the picture of you with the pink spiked hair, the choke collar, and the 40 gauge earring that has a hoop so big you could fuck it on their earlobe is probably a strong indicator. I mean, not definite, but
okay. Assuming non-online dating.
Oh.
Well, then you're just gonna talk to her, and you're gonna find out if she's the right kind of atypical.
How about show, don't tell?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How do you show that and you don't tell it?
You just are who you are, and then someone draws the inductive conclusion.
Okay, So basically this Reddit is an example of the issues with online dating. Because
This Reddit? Just this one?
Well, you have to tell instead of show
on
online
dating. Lots of them,
yes.
This is an example of the tell instead of show on online dating, where it's so disconnected from reality, you can't see the show right away, so it's a lot easier to tell and to tell stupid hive mind shit.
Right, I mean, instead of saying things like, I'm not your typical girl, when it lists, like, your interests, like, one could be, like, 13th century theology, and second could be,
swipe
like,
left.
You know,
left.
The records of Pablo Neruda,
swipe
or whatever
left.
It is.
Swipe left.
Like, that, I would know you're not a typical girl because you're studying 13th century theology, like, I get it.
Just put Batman.
Anyway.
Swipe right. Batman, swipe right.
All a girl's profile has to say. It's just a picture of her looking good and the word Batman.
Yep. I was swiping right on every profile that said that.
You heard it here first, ladies. Line up.
All right. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that global warming causes global warming. In a paradoxically.
James?
I learned...
Fuck, you've never participated.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I can speak for myself.
How are they supposed to know who learned something unless Justin tells them who's speaking?
Yeah. How are they supposed to know I'm the host if I don't show them instead of telling them? If I just tell them I'm the host, it doesn't work.
That's right.
I feel like I learned something a broad idea, not just that, you know, sarcastic means bitchy, just the way curvy means fat, but like just this general thing is like, I need to look for these certain words because they're going to be the same for everyone. Like when people lie, they're not that creative because lying at the end of the day requires some level of thinking, which, you know, a liar won't commit to. So, you know. That's what I'll look for. Thank you.
You're welcome. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that in online dating and dating in general, rather than telling women I have a dick, I should just show them.
I'm glad that's the conclusion you came to, because I feel like you're going to get a lot more dates now, but it's going to be with men. So, if you learned something this week, why don't you tell us?
You'd like to have a date with a man?
I hear Justin's free this weekend and every other weekend. So the thing is,
June 18th, douchebag.
Don't tell people when I'm getting married, please.
So I shouldn't tell people about the secret Periscope I'm going to be doing for podcast fans?
Oh my god.
Periscoping my wedding ceremony?
No, creepy. I'm not, why would anyone do that?
Why would anyone do that? Is there going to be good lighting? Why would anyone do that? Is there going to be a sound recording? Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There will be a sound system that you can plug into if you want. So, if you learned something, why don't you go to, first and foremost, iTunes? Because, yes, word of mouth. We love word of mouth, but iTunes. Seriously. Just go to iTunes and read other people's review of our podcast. I know that sounds like a gay old time, and it is, but they're hilarious. We have the best fans, and they write the best 5-star reviews, not 4, or 1, or 2, or even 3, but 5-star reviews.
Are our fans the Flintstones writers?
Meet the Flintstones, yes. What?
We'll have a gay old time?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A Yabba-Doo time, in fact. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A Time Lord time. So... give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That moves us up the chart. Remember that we are in steep competition with Welcome to Night Vale, whatever the fuck that is. When you type in Welcome to in iTunes, the first fucking thing needs to be the Midside, not whatever shitty, nerdy, nonsense Night Vale is. So we need to get the ranks up, which means you need to give us 5-star rating. But also, as Justin said at the top of the show, tell some people. Tell your neighbors. Tell the creepy people upstairs of me. Tell your coworkers. Tell the Metro driver, because he's got nothing better to do, because he's going to kill us all anyway, at least me. And most importantly, tell your mom, because really, who deserves the gift of the Midside more than the woman who shat you out of her vagina?
Apologize for missing Mother's Day by sharing the podcast with her.
That's right. Your mama needs to listen to the Midside. Hashtag Midside Mamas. Yeah, I want to see it. That's right.
Midside Mamas. We want pictures. Send pics.
It's just going to be Motive Power sending a bunch of tweets about old-fashioned moms.
Oh, we love Motive Power. We love all of our Twitter folks. You can reach us at the Midside on Twitter. You can tell James off when he does something bad. Or when he laughs like a 13-year-old girl.
You can make fun of my laugh.
prepubescent Chinese chick. Yeah. And then, of course, Facebook.com/Midside. And then, most importantly, Patreon.com. That's Patreon.com/Midside, where we have some just unbelievably great supporters who give us actual money, believe it or not.
Patreon.
Real paper.
Digital.
Currency.
It's not paper.
Real paper digital currency. That we use for hookers and blow. Otherwise,
so many hookers and blow here on the Midside.
Yep, otherwise known as web hosting. Yeah. And lights. Keeps the lights on. That's right, James.
God,
thanks for reminding me.
So many lights. Just, I mean, I got floodlights on, just tactical lights on, car headlights, the lights behind my television, just all these lights celebrating.
We're so obsessed with it, I flicked a lighter on. That's how obsessed I am.
Yeah, I don't want
all
any
these
more light
lights,
bulbs
you guys.
To explode. So.
Yeah.
That's right.
All these lights. Your Patreon donations go to keep those lights on so we can be illuminated while we do
all
the
time.
All the time, damn it.
Yes. And then, of course, thank you to Liberty.me for distributing us to their podcast network. We love our libertarian listeners out there, even though we probably insult you more than anyone else on the planet. We still love you.
That's okay. I'm voting Gary Johnson, so.
Yeah, hashtag feel the Johnson, bitches.
Yeah, feel our Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, back to you, Jay.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Hail Snydra!
I like it. I like it. I like.
Never
going to
turn down a good transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Never. Good. It's good. Thank you.
Speaking of transitions, that's what we should have done on the fucking Bruce Jenner one. Oh my god. Oh, we missed it.
Oh man.